We're standing alive with Rita Steele on 95BFM.
Hello, Rita.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good. Now, you've had COVID of late. How's it been?
Charming.
Charming.
Yeah, I definitely got it the worst of the family, and still recovering. So seems to be the way, though. Like, some people just seem to be fine and then others aren't. I think I ate a gastro like a few days before from the kids, and I think that wiped my immunity. So, yeah.
Do you know, I did the, strangely enough, I also had a gastro combo, which I gave to Vince, the program director.
From kids?
Yes, from children. I got some gastro and then also got COVID. So.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Were you all right from it?
Yeah, my COVID was super mild.
I got hammered. Mm. I was in bed for 2 days.
Yeah.
Not great. I can see why somebody with immune issues or if you're older.
Will get
really
wiped
struggle.
Out. Yeah. I probably had one day of COVID that was pretty grunty, but then I was actually all right. It was just a bit of a blocked nose for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I've still got the remainder head cold, as you'll be able to hear, I'm sure. So, yeah. Well, it's just trying to not push yourself too hard. It's a funny thing, everyone says, oh, make sure you rest. And it's like, yeah, it's the year 2022. You just, the world doesn't stop, you know, you just got to keep going.
Mm.
So, yeah, anyway, I haven't had my nap today, so I'm sleeping well tonight.
And now, Rita, what are we talking about this afternoon? This evening, what is the topic of this week's Sustaining Alive?
So we're going to attempt to crack three waters.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's something that has been on our radar for quite some time, and it is relatively complicated and very emotional for some people. So what I'm going to try and do is cover it from a very basic perspective, and then if the caller really wants to dive any deeper, then I think maybe we could get someone that's pro and somebody that's quite anti, on board to have a chat to us. But people may feel like this is enough. So we'll take the listeners' side on that. Should we just crack into it?
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. So, Rita. I mean, just very basically, it's three waters because it covers our drinking water, our storm water. So just that's everything like when it rains, the stuff that comes off your roof and down the roads and whatnot, and then our wastewater, which is sewage in a nutshell. Currently, it's the responsibility for those three things sits across 67 councils across the country, who mainly, it's about 85% of it is managed by them. The rest of it is all kind of on site stuff. Hang on, I've just had a little person come in. Hang on. Hey, babe. Well, sorry. Okay, so I just had a little friend come and visit me. So the rest of it is kind of like, water tanks and that sort of thing. So 85% is sitting with the council. Some councils are much better than others at managing those three areas. No one will be, like, you would have to have been in a cave for the last few years to not know about some of the issues that we've had. So, for example, Havelock North, where we had 8,000 people infected with Campylobacter a few years ago, 4 people died and multiple became disabled and sick from it. That's pretty gnarly. And then we've also had some issues with Wellington sewage sort of pouring out onto the streets. Auckland, we're all from there. Almost, I think the listeners will be from here. We know that we have beach closures almost every time it rains.
I thought there was like a bunch of nitrogen in the water supply in Christchurch.
Yes.
So we've
absolutely.
We've got like three fairly big issues happening, and of course the infrastructure in Auckland is antiquated and, as you say, leaking into the harbour every time it sort of rains. I thought basically this was, in a nutshell, the call with three waters is to centralise it all rather than individual councils having to pony up and find the money to repair all this stuff because they don't have the budget to. The central government would just take control of it all and then deal with these massive issues. I mean, if we're getting out 8,000 people with gastro, you know, that is incredibly, that's horrific, you know. So it's a central government issue. Why wouldn't you centralise it?
That's totally it in a nutshell. They've also post sort of Havelock North. They did a big investigation into what's going on broader than just Havelock North, and they found that we had a really big issue in terms of it's going to take about $120 to $185 billion to upgrade all of our systems. So you know, that's a lot of money, and the councils are basically broke. So most of them. So you know, it's not a priority for a lot of them. But this would take it from 67 councils into 4 regional entities. So they'd sort of be grouped regionally, you know, Upper North Island, Central North Island, kind of thing.
Seems like a good idea to me. Why wouldn't we do this?
Yeah. So there is some issues with it, as there is with everything. I guess. Very quickly, we've talked about a lot of these pros. So it really, the biggest one really is that we can it allows the Crown to borrow the money, because obviously they've got a much better book balance than councils do. So that the Crown can borrow the money, and I guess it's really important, like you've identified, the current system just isn't working. So something does have to change, and a lot of those councils are actually stacked with conflict of interest. So down, like, you know, in areas where there's nitrogen going into the drinking water, a lot of those areas are actually, the councils are stacked with farmers. And that sounds kind of, you know, in some regards worse than it probably is. Like, those people just happen to be farmers because they're farming areas. So it's not like any insidious kind of thing. But of course they're going to vote to keep the status quo. So those sort of issues arise. There's also operational efficiency. So I guess those pros are pretty obvious. The cons, okay, so I guess the ownership structure is a major issue. So it kind of contradicts themselves in some ways. So it says that the ownership will not... it's kind of... The way that it's worded is a bit sketchy as far as I'm concerned. It's like ownership still stays council, but control doesn't, which is kind of interesting, and also it already sets itself up for like legislative and regulatory issues down the track. And the one that I am worried about the most is that to me it seems set up in a way that makes it very easy to sell. So, you know, there's talk about them writing something into the legislation which means that it can't be sold, but I mean legislation is simply amendable. So to me it's like, oh, this is a really nasty kind of, like, all it takes is one government that, you know, let's say 10, 15 years down the track when we have set this up so that our water infrastructure looks great, it's then in a very good place to be sold. So that's the part that for me makes me a little bit nervous about this whole thing, and is a legitimate concern for it. So especially when we have had governments, you know, very, you know, come in and sell big chunks of...
You're talking about creating the infrastructure around electricity generation in particular, and looking good, looking after the people, but then selling off a chunk of the electricity generation to overseas parties?
Yeah, in a nutshell. And they were profitable, you know, finally profitable, and we used that money for operational. I'm not even sure what we used the money for. It was supposed to go to schools, but never did. So it's kind of one of those things that just makes me a little bit nervous, and it's made other people nervous as well. So I think that's probably one of the big red flags here. There's also some...
I mean, how does... listeners, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Say Three Waters happened and we shored up all of the wastewater and water supply, infrastructure in Aotearoa, and then sold it off to overseas. Does anyone have any qualms about that? Okay, Rita, keep going.
Yeah, cool. Interesting to hear. I mean, So the other thing is that there's some councils that are actually doing really well managing their water and have a good plan in place to fix things. And Auckland's kind of an example of this, in that we have been pouring money recently into fixing our water infrastructure. So we've got that interceptor going in. We're all paying a targeted rate to improve our water quality, to fix those beaches that are being overloaded during stormwater, downpours. So, I think if there's a feeling like a lot of these places will be like paying a gain when we go into a system where we're being lumped in with other areas that have spent nothing on the infrastructure, and then we're going to have to kind of help them out. And another good example of that would be Nelson and Wellington. So Nelson's water infrastructure is pretty good, and Wellington's got billions of dollars that needs to be poured into it. So there's a feeling from Nelson that they already have fixed their own backyard, and now they're having to fix someone else's. So I guess there's that you know, has made this pretty inequitable across the country. The other thing is just some kind of operational stuff. Like, there's not a lot at the moment. There's not a lot of like reviews or anything on a regular basis. But I think some of that stuff will get worked out in select committees as it goes through. You know, that it needs to have strategy reviews every 10 years or whatever, like we do with council. Surely that stuff will get fixed. And in fact, even along the way from when this first came out to now, there's been lots of changes. There's a lot of people that are a bit grumpy about the co-governance model, which, I don't really think is the end of the world. So we'll just tap into that a little bit, because I think people are a bit confused about this. And it's like a hotbed for racists, so we'll talk about it. So basically, the way that the co-governance will work is actually only at the strategy level. So at the very top level, how are we going? And I guess it will be those decisions like, are we going to sell this entity, or are we going to, those big strategic decisions, there's a co-governance model. And what that means is that there'll be representatives, 50% from regional councils, and then the other 50% will be iwi, and they're not elected. So that becomes an issue for some people, that there will be representation at that strategic level that isn't influenced by voters. So, there is a little bit of an issue there. But then as we get down into like the operational control and day-to-day running of it, I mean, all that stuff is sitting with boards that are appointed by their expertise and skills. So I think, I think there will be enough influence in there for it not to be too much of a, bureaucratic nightmare at the top. And I do think the co-governance is not really as big a deal as some people are making it. And it has been already starting to be watered down, and I wouldn't be surprised if by the time this gets through, it will be watered down even more. We're currently running, interestingly, I didn't actually know this, but we're currently running the Waikato like this. Like, Waikato River Authority is set up as a co-governance model, where 50% are iwi and 50% are from the council. So,
does anyone have an issue with that? Let us know, 5395. Hey, Rita, we have had a couple of texts through. Someone saying Three Waters also provides economies of scale. Oh, hang on, I've actually got heaps of texts through. Wait, hang on. I'm just going to go back in time here, Rita.
Okay.
Three Waters also provides economies of scale, so the larger entities can have specialist engineering skills, etc., that smaller councils cannot afford. Okay, economies of scale from larger. And someone's also said, hey, Johnny, need to have a balanced discussion, so anti-spokesperson would be good, so to be neutral. So, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I think we spent quite a bit of time on cons there. So I think, I think it's, fair to say that I've tried to keep this pretty balanced. But yeah, definitely operational efficiencies will be gained, and this is the thing about living in a democratic society that has a slightly social lean, is that the idea is that we pool our resources, to help each other out, and we certainly shouldn't be sitting here in Auckland going, oh, but I pay a targeted rate, so why should I have to bail out Havelock North?
Well, I should, I mean, Havelock North, they need to sort their own shit out. I mean, only 8,000 people got sick.
Well, you know,
they can handle it,
yeah,
right?
I get that, but people are dying, and, you know, so it's kind of like, well, maybe we should help them out a little bit.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, it's, yeah, I can see that because people are struggling. I know that, you know, a lot of water bills are sort of up in the $100 to $120 a month at the moment, and then on top of that, you've got your targeted rate, which I think is a few hundred dollars a year. And then, you know, and then they're saying that, you know, once, well, they're saying this is going to be cheaper. You know, it's so hard to know. But without reforms, they're saying you're looking at about $2,000 to $10,000 a year on water.
Mm-hmm.
And with the reforms, about $800 to $1,600. I don't really believe either of those numbers, to be honest with you. Like, I think they've probably overshot the without reforms, and they've probably undershot the with reforms. Because $800, I mean, we paid more than that already for our, you know, water. So I can't imagine the water ever getting cheaper.
Hey, Rita, I reckon this is obviously like a massive, we might have to do a 2 or 3-parter on this.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, I did think that, I mean, it's a pretty 101 kind of overview of it. And I think that we need to go into it eyes wide open. I personally think one of the biggest issues that I have with it is that it's happening pretty quickly in some regards, and that's always a worry because fast legislation is often bad legislation.
Yes.
But equally, I also worry that this is a little bit of, for somebody that has worked in freshwater for a while, I worry that this is just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic again.
Mm.
Like, you know, we had this, we had the national framework, you know, we had the, like, they just keep redoing things to kind of, you know, not talk about the elephant in the room, which is that we're overshooting our ecosystem. Like, we're degrading our ecosystems, and that's a major problem. And so instead of actually dealing with the problems head on, we're just kind of reshuffling things again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what my concern is. But I do equally think something has to happen because, you know, you can't have boil notices regularly in a you know, first world country. It's just ridiculous. So,
all right, Rita.
Yeah, cool. We can get a pro and a anti on.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
We'll do some digging. Hey, Rita, cool. Thank you very much for this evening. We will look forward to next week.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye.
See you, Johnny. Bye.
That was Sustaining Alive with Rita Steele on 95 BFM.